My name's Claire. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Claire.
Welcome to A Path Through the Program, a 10-part survey of various aspects of the AA program with a couple of different formats designed to appeal to both AAs and Al-Anons, or indeed anyone using the 12 steps. We're ordinary members of the fellowship, and we don't speak for AA or Al-Anon. We hope you find our experience helpful. The format of the session is as follows. Our three speakers will speak between us for about a half an hour on a topic. As they are speaking, you are encouraged to write down any questions you have on slips of paper. Paper and pens will be distributed. Our assistants, John and Cara, will collect these during the meeting. We will then select questions and, if we can, address them by sharing our experience. The session will last 50 minutes in total. The session is being recorded. Recordings will be made available online over the next few days at a member's personal blog site, which is not affiliated with AA. The QR code and site address are available here on the front table. Let's start with a few moments of silent prayer to use as you wish. Thank you. This session's topic is service as a way of life. And Jimmy is going to kick us off, followed by Alistair and then Helene. Off you go, Jimmy.
Hi, I'm Jimmy. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. It's March the 25th of 2019, which means that last month I just turned 5. I have a home group. It's the Brick Lane Big Book Study. And I cannot stress the importance of having a big book study in my repertoire of meetings because the solution is there. And I've learned everything that I know about recovery or even how to interact in life from that. And one of those core tenets is how to be of service to other people and to my fellows around me. I also have a couple other service positions. I'm the GSR for Brick Lane, which means that I'm the link between that group and Intergroup. And I also have a service position at Intergroup where I am the representative for the City of London Intergroup and London Region North. That has taught me an immense amount of gratitude and how to operate in many different areas of my life. So where I wanted to talk about being of service is, you know, the most important thing is working with others. And there's this, I actually did a little bit of research and I was looking into the big book to see how many times the word service was mentioned in the first 164 pages. And I found four really good references. And the first is and more about alcoholism. And we, as alcoholics, work with one another. We have a major service that we do, and that is to describe the mental states that precede a relapse. And working with others, you know, it's there's so much value out of working with somebody else because you get to show them like the parts of the mentality, like where the powerlessness comes from, where you know, alcohol, it's like this uncontrollable thing that you can't see how it's affecting your life. And you get to sit down with somebody and ask them, like, where have you been unable to stop drinking? Can you recite some of these examples? Can you write them down on paper? Like, that was one of the biggest things that my sponsor did for me, was when we were working step one, you know, list out all of the identification that I had in Bill's story. And then, you know, where were the instances in which, that I could not control my drinking, and when did I overshoot, and when did I just get it just right? That paper, it sits in my bedside table, and I refer back to it on a regular basis. There was something I forgot to start with, which is, how do I be of service? And every morning, I wake up, and I get on my knees, and I pray that God put people in my life that I can be helpful to, and I clear this channel where I can be, you know, God is my employer. That is the most important thing. It's like, how can I be of service to God And, you know, I think my higher power is a little bit of a funny sense of humor, because the more I ask for people to be in my life that I can be of service to, the more that God presents those situations. So I have quite a few sponsees. I have a sponsor, and I have sponsees that now have sponsees. And that puts me right in the middle of this program. It gives me examples, like I have people that I can look up to, but even the people I sponsor, they motivate me, and they show me what it really means to work this program. I also had the ability to work through the traditions, and in doing that, I learned that I can work those traditions in all areas of my life, every single one of them. So I try to bring this idea of being of service to work. How I do that is exactly how I was sponsored into the program. I will sit down with the people that report to me. We do like a lot of data analysis and stuff, and GDPR is like a big part of it. I will sit down with a new employee and say, okay, you read a paragraph of GDPR compliance, then I'll read a paragraph of GDPR compliance. What did you understand of it? Where are the words that you don't understand? Let's go look them up together. Let's learn. And so I take this program and I implemented it at work, and the amazing things have happened for me. And I've gotten, you know, pushed along the path at work. And the things that I see running in business meetings where, you know, being the GSR or being at Region and taking that and bringing it into the office. In January, I had a huge meeting with all of the C-level people, and there's like 40 people in the room, and I can say that working in an organization like that, C-levels are kind of like newcomers. They're all over the place. They want to tell you how to do the job. And I had to run that environment. And one of the people that worked with me, they came up to me and they were like, what happened? All of a sudden you went from like here to here, you know, and you're able to control an entire room of 40 people. I'm like, I'm thinking in the back of my head, I'm like, that was definitely the business meeting last week. I do this at work, and the other place that I try to be of service is at home. Last night we read To the Wives, and there's this paragraph that talks about the loneliness and the uncertainty that we create in our home environment. And so when I go back home, I don't forget that. I don't forget the chaos that I create. And so I try to be of service. If someone asks me to drive them to the airport, I drive them to the airport. If someone asks me to help set up a party, I will help set up the party. And I'm gonna end on a little warning. So this year I had a very interesting situation. I have a flatmate who's on the board for the company, and I saw an opportunity. I said, oh, there's this thing that, you know, I can help you get in with the C-level people. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna create this extra thing, and I'm gonna put you in charge of it. And I sent the email, and I got back an email which said, I don't really feel like that's my responsibility. My reaction was, don't worry, you'll be great at it. And I just sent it off. And then there was all of this friction that was happening between me and my flatmate, and I couldn't understand it. And I went to my sponsor in tremendous pain. Like, I don't understand. Why isn't she doing what I want her to do? And we read through the emails, and the thing that my sponsor pointed out to me was, this person did not ask you for help. And yet you pushed yourself on them and created this situation. So one of the things that I've learned, and this is the warning, is that, you know, My alcoholism turns into Al-Anonism. I want to save everybody. But what I really need to do is I really need to look for when somebody asks me. When someone asks for my help, that's when I give it. Never before, and I never try to force myself on to people. And if I do that, I can have a pretty peaceful life. So I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Hi everyone, my name's Alistair, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Alistair.
Hi Alistair.
To be here. Thank you all for staying on at 5:30 on a Sunday evening. You're doing a great bit of service by just turning up and showing up. So I think firstly, I'd like to say it's excellent spirit here at this convention, I'm very grateful to be able to have attended, it is a privilege to be able to attend this, and I should never forget that, never think it's a privilege to attend any AA event. Service is a way of life. Lots of thoughts went when I was asked to speak. Lots of thoughts went through my head about what am I going to talk about? Am I going to talk about the service structure? Am I going to talk about service sponsorship? And at that part of step 12, it says we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. That encompasses everything, whether it's the service structure or whether I'm doing service at a meeting, group level, intergroup, region, wherever it might be, or I'm doing sponsorship. It has to be a way of life. When I'm compartmentalizing anything, my life quickly becomes very disjointed. So really that part of step 12 is very important. I remember when I asked my first sponsor to sponsor me, and I kind of knew to sponsor me. I knew the question that was coming, or all the sort of the newcomers we had got together, and we knew they were going to ask, are you willing to go to any lengths? So he said, he asked the question, I went, yes, straight away. And then he asked this funny question. He said, are you prepared to carry the message after you've had a spiritual awakening to other alcoholics? And I was confused. I just said, I'll do that. I had no idea what it meant, but it was a very good question. So my experience has been, I think I was a few months sober, and I wrote a WhatsApp message to my first sponsor, and literally you could have scrolled. It was reels and reels of rubbish and nonsense. Some of it was even, most of it I can't remember what the problems were. These were issues in my life. And one of them, the only one I do remember, was a complaint about a group, another home group member, we shared the same group, home group, about how he, when the pot was getting passed, he banged the table so it sounded like he was contributing, but actually wasn't putting anything in the pot. And the message came back, when was the last time you spoke to a newcomer? And it was about the time I was taking... preparing myself to take step 3, and I read the big book, and I suddenly realised this self-centred fear was just driving my life. And I had lots of thoughts after that message, that reply. But at the next meeting, I could see a newcomer just standing there. He was kind of nervous, jittery, didn't know what to do, didn't know whether to get a cup of tea or go into the meeting, whatever he was doing. And at that moment, I asked God for a bit of help. Because I was full of self-centered fear. I thought that there's nothing. They don't want to hear from me. They don't. I've got nothing to offer. And if the truth be told, I didn't have much to offer, but I had a little bit of sobriety, enough sobriety to walk over there. And I asked God for some help, and I walked over and I said, hey, how are you doing? And I just listened. And that was honestly the first... Well, for my first experience of getting over that, knowing that there was a power that could get me through that bit of self-centered fear, to go over and talk to someone and ask them how they were doing and actually listen. When I take that third step, and the first time I took it, I don't think I really understood the enormity of it, but I'm actually, my life is in God's care. That's a huge decision to make. My life of service has not always been successful. I end up reverting back to this step 3. I always need to, it requires persistent and consistent effort. When I'm in trouble, I'm taking my life back, and whether it be on the, whether I'm being, whether it's troubles in my home life, whatever part of life I'm having, it's because I'm taking my life back into my control, and I think I know what I'm gonna be happy doing so, and then I end up going back to step 3 and turning and consistently persistent effort at turning my life over to the care of God. So when I turn my life over, my time schedule is no longer my own. My first bit of service, sort of formal bit of service, was actually as a treasurer. Now, the irony of this, I think it was about a year sober. The irony of this, in my profession, I handled, it wasn't mine, but I handled billions of dollars, and I had no understanding of how money worked and how money functioned and how to handle money. And the way I started to learn a little bit was collecting £17.50 in a meeting in Sevenoaks on a Wednesday night. That was how I started to learn to handle it. In taking these steps, I realised pretty quickly I needed to have a spiritual awakening. In taking these steps, what am I? Is it so that I can get my life back and I can make a success of life? No, the entire success of the program for me is about clearing the blockage for me to be of service. To clear away all that stuff that's prevented me to be of service to God and to the people around me. So sponsorship plays an enormous role in that, but so does working in the service structure, being of service in the service structure. So that's where actually, there is power in Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's power in the program, and that comes through working with others, actually, to be of service, to sponsor someone else. And it's been mentioned a lot in earlier parts of these earlier sessions. When I'm sponsoring another alcoholic, I get to see my own insanity reflected back at me. And when I don't put service as the number one thing in my life, I have found myself in difficulties. I want to put sponsees second place. I'll do the treasurer. I currently serve as treasurer for Continental European Region, which is a region of Alcoholics Anonymous Great Britain, even though it's the continent of Europe. When I put that stuff second, all of a sudden I start to have problems. I start to have issues. The emotional disturbances start inside me. Somebody said to me, be very careful about making a career in AA. Because what I'm doing is I'm chasing prestige. I like the title. I've done it in my job. And then once I come into AA and get sober, I can start to chase that as well. And for me, I'll start to wind up here. Service is not, it makes up the content of my life, trying to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I lost my train of thought. Whenever I've got myself in trouble, it's because I've put those things second. So that has got to remain the number one priority in my life. So it's been an exercise in practicing humility. It's actually about how low I can stoop to be of service, rather than how high I can accomplish. Most of my life has been. The majority of my life was how much I could accomplish, and in having a psychic change, the complete reversal is actually how low I can stoop to be of service, and it's also not about the other person. Who or what am I serving? There's a line in Working with Others about. It says when we start to put the serving the alcoholic, when we start to put life on the service plane, they start to rely on us rather than on the higher power. And I struggled with that line for years. I thought, well, it's being of service. What are you, service, service, service. The service, the point is the service is to the higher power. The steps clear away that blockage so I can help and I can be that channel that serves God in serving, in helping someone else. And when the channel is blocked, it's because I'm chasing something else. I'm chasing the prestige and the channel is blocked. When I take the actions of the first 11 steps, I'm in a position where I can be of service. I can be that channel and help another alcoholic. Sometimes it's not always, when I'm serving in the service structure, I don't always see the results of that. And so it's important that I have to remember that I don't necessarily have to see the results, but I have to take the actions. I'm not responsible for the results. And I'll leave it there.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Helene. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Helene.
Really good to be here and really good to talk about service as a way of life. I'm not sure that I chose that way of life when I came into AA or that I knew I was choosing that way of life. You know, I'd been drinking for 18 years and I was desperate to stop drinking. And I was also desperate to have some purpose in my life. I got into other addictions. I'd become very isolated by the end of my drinking. And my sobriety date is the 31st of December, 1997. And I couldn't have gone through another year. I believed, I didn't know this was one day at a time, but I didn't believe I could have gone through another. I was very suicidal and I didn't believe I could have gone through another year feeling the way I was feeling at that point. I'd become a daily drinker. So I would have done anything, if I'd been able to listen, at that point to stay sober. And when I came to my first meeting at Leighton's Stone Step on a Tuesday night, it's not there anymore actually, somebody said to me very early on, and I have no idea who said it to me, my early days in AA are very much a blur, but I know that somebody suggested to me that anything I was asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, it would be a good idea to do it. To put this before other things in my life, and other things in my life would work out well as a result. I now know that's the fifth tradition, that as a group anywhere, our primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. And it's what's outlined in the preamble. You know, before most meetings, well, before just about every meeting. So my primary purpose, the most important thing that I do in my life today, is to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. And what I learned through it, so I got a home group very early on. People said to me, get a home group. I liked the idea of home. You know, Bill Wilson talks, I think, in Language of the Heart about the significance of home, that sense of coming home. And I really felt like I'd come home at my first meeting. I still remember that beautiful feeling. I have it sitting here today, actually. That real connectedness with others. Because I had been very separated and I felt full of shame. Some of the stuff I had done. And some of the stuff I'd done without a drink. And I didn't understand alcoholism. So I was doubting whether I was in the right place. So I felt separated in AA as well. I thought if they knew some of the stuff that I had done, they really wouldn't speak to me again. And, you know, and there are people who know my whole story and they do still speak to me today, you know. So all of that was self-centered fear, but a lot of suffering. I had suffered a lot. I'd suffered an awful lot in my mind. And that sense of having a home group. And, you know, what I learned after that was that home group is part of the AA triangle, you know, of the recovery, the steps, the unity, you know, the fellowship, the home group, that sense of unity in that home group, the fellowship afterwards, the fellowship in between meetings, and the service. It was said to me very early on, and actually I was put forward for service very early on. I was going to an East End meeting and we had a group conscience and somebody said they need someone to do the tea, and the guy who became my first sponsor said, that's fine, Helene will do it. And I remember being furious, thinking, well, you don't, you know, in my mind, this meeting was full of Irish men, and Irish men had told me what to do all my life. And, you know, I wasn't having someone tell me what to do, but, you know, I said, fine. You know, I said, that's absolutely fine. And I didn't know why that was so important to me. I used to run people over on my way there to get there in time to make the best tea that anyone had ever made. And I became secretary of the meeting before I was a year sober, which is a bit against the guidelines, but I thought I was a bit brighter than most of them and that my role would be to chair the group consciences and to sum it all up and then make my own decisions. So I had a lot to learn. You know, I had a lot to learn in AA, and I learned a lot through serving. But, you know, that's one strand of step 12. I guess that's practicing this in all my affairs. And the first place I've needed to learn to practice this is in the rooms of AA. I've needed to learn to behave properly in the rooms of AA. And then I can take it. I can be of maximum service in my work. I'm in the same job for 12 years. I mean, that is a miracle that I have stayed in that job, and that I've been able to work this program for 12 years through all kinds of changes. And, you know, and lots of people have left or been asked to leave in that time. But, you know, I've been able to work my program through it, and it's good at the moment. I've been able to work it in my family. I've been able to see where I'm playing God. And I've been able to work it with my neighbors, you know, and I'm feeding their cats this weekend. We have a kind of a cat community. Before that, I had a dog community. But, you know, at the end of my drinking, I wasn't talking to anyone. You know, I was fighting with everyone, people in my local area. I was fighting with my family. I don't know if I had a job that I'd lied my way into. And I wasn't able to stay in recovery because I believed you had to lie to do the job. So I needed to, you know, to get a sponsor and to go through the book. And what was pointed out to me over and over again in the book, it's not just those last few chapters working with others and to wives and to employers and the family afterward and the vision for you. There, you know, those are the step 12 principles that this topic relates to. But the book tells me, and, you know, I take new people through this book, and I point out to them from the very beginning, the book is talking about to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. That's in the foreword to the first edition. And the whole way through the book, Bill Wilson is reminding me that I may not, and in Bill's story, you know, he talks about the fact that I may not get through the certain low spots ahead if I don't work with others. Because faith without works is dead. You know, I've had quite a few sponsors, and I've had various home groups, and I've always been in service. There was only one time when I had no home group and no service commitment, and it was a very dismal time for me, and I drifted around. And I was 10 years sober, and I was at the Brighton Convention, and I met a woman who told me I was suffering from untreated alcoholism. I remember thinking the cheek of her, but I hadn't been through the book. You know, I hadn't been through the book, and, you know, I had been doing lots of inventory because somebody must have shown me how to do inventory, but I hadn't been through the whole, it was half measures. So she offered to take me through. I think I had to ring her at 7:45 every day, and we went through it, but it wasn't her. It was only a three-column step 4. And, you know, it doesn't talk about the fourth column in the big book, but it talks about turning back to our list. It didn't have that. It didn't have me looking at my wrongs. So I couldn't do an amends list, a thorough amends list. I couldn't do thorough amends. So it was incomplete. And, you know, then I had another couple of sponsors, really helpful, and I got to do all my amends. And then I got a woman who took me through the whole book right from the beginning, you know, right to the end of the book, because I hadn't done it. I kept talking like I had, and I thought I had, but I hadn't really. And I needed to do that in order for me to be confident about passing it on to others. I did sponsor women in those early days. Many of them are still sober. I did tell them that I went back and did it more thoroughly, that it didn't feel like, you know, and I said, I don't want to alarm you. But for me, it has been really important to move from half measures to a very thorough program. because I may not survive. Because if I don't do that, I'm not going to work with others. I'm not going to be confident. I wasn't. Let's talk about me. I wasn't confident working with others until I had been given the full product, as it talks about in the book. You know, in my case, I was taken through it line by line, and the book came alive for me. And now I do that with others. You know, Bill talks in Bill's story, or I think it's in one of the forewords, it is in one of the forewords, about frantically working with other alcoholics. I remember when I first read that, I thought, that's a bit much, isn't it? But it is. I find if I have other stuff going on, and I know I'm coming up to my time, I have had stuff with, you know, difficulties in my family of late with a family member who's very ill mentally and, you know, who I've been quite concerned about. And I got far too involved. Thank God we're still in one another's lives. He sent me a beautiful message last night, but I got far too involved in his life and my own mental health started to suffer. And I started to look for some newcomers to work with, and I frantically worked with some newcomers. And it's brought me back to sanity, and it's brought me back to good health and vitality and enthusiasm. Because I can't work with someone who doesn't want it. That's not me. I can be helpful. I can listen. I can try to be kind, tolerant, considerate. But I can't spend too much time on someone who doesn't want this. Whether they're in the program and they want to drink again, or they don't want to do what I'm offering, or any family member. All I can be is an example and a kind and loving presence in their life. Thanks for asking me to share.
Great. So now we've come to the questions and answers portion of the meeting. So while Cara and John are going around again to see if there's any other questions, I have a few here. I'll start with this one. Is it ever okay to say no to an AA request? Jimmy.
So my sponsor tells me that I always say yes to service, and I do that about like every time, every opportunity. The only time that I don't do service when I'm asked is if there's somebody else that could benefit from it. I'm like a guilty of doing this with my home group, where I'll try to do everybody service, realizing that, you know, that's not helpful for them. So I try to stay in my own lane and do the service that is put in front of me.
My sponsor talks about I just never say no to any reasonable request. I've never said no because I have never received an unreasonable request yet. But his longer experience, maybe he's been asked to do something unreasonable, and I haven't had that experience. I say yes to everything, and I haven't. Yeah, I just say yes.
Yeah, I don't ever remember saying no. I haven't always wanted to do the service. For example, I've just finished a ward service at my local hospital group. It's a good service. And I wasn't sure I wanted to stay part of that group. And then somebody nominated me in the group conscience to be secretary. She'd had a drink, actually. But anyway, she... and she'd come to meet me at the meeting, and she nominated me in the group conscience to be secretary. So where God guides, God provides. I'm now secretary. And somebody asked me recently to sponsor her, and she wasn't sure if she was an alcoholic. So, well, I said what it says in the book, go away and read the book and ask yourself some questions. And I pointed out the questions in page 44. So I didn't say no. But, you know, I'm probably not going to want to sponsor someone who isn't an alcoholic. But I realise as well there's a lot of denial with this illness. So, you know, I did what is suggested in there.
So the next one, what is the biggest mistake you have made in service, and what lessons did you learn?
So for me, you know, the 12th tradition, where we take ourselves out of the results, right, where we let the group decide. And I definitely was very guilty in the very beginning of being the GSR for my home group, where, you know, I felt myself trying to maneuver decisions that the group was making because of my own core beliefs. And, you know, as always, in tremendous pain before I realized that, you know, like, why am I so upset? Why? Because things are not going my way. It had to be pointed out to me, you know, talking through my sponsor, that you're supposed to be completely detached. You're just a servant of the group, and you allow them to make the decision. So that was probably the biggest mistake I've made.
I actually wanted to. I've made plenty of mistakes in service and in recovery in a more general sense. It's not the mistakes that will per se that will kill me, but defending and justifying them will kill me. I think the one that springs to mind. There's plenty of others, but one that I decided to take a PI initiative on my own. And I thought, right at the last minute, just before it was a PI card, you know, with meetings listing and contact details, and I thought I better run this past group just to, you know, tick that box. And then and then someone said, have you actually asked all the meetings whether they want to be listed on this PI initiative? And I kind of exploded and hit the roof, and because I had this expectation of it just getting approved and that was it. And I had a fierce argument with someone in the conscious, very embarrassing. I had to make amends to that person, who happens to be the chair of the the group in Prague. And Do you know what I? It took me some time to admit my wrong, but that initiative would never have got over the line. And I actually did take it to all the groups, and all the groups were fine with it, and it went out, and hopefully it helped carry the message. I also made amends to that person, and this is what comes as as the change. Like, that person comes to me now and asks me, will you do this, Alistair? And the answer's just yes. I did make amends, and my behaviour was frankly appalling. It was very embarrassing, and it was even more embarrassing making the amends and going, recounting my behaviour. But as a result, I didn't expect a result, but as a result, he periodically asked me to do things in AA, and it's great. It was super. So, that's it.
I think in service generally, the biggest mistake I've made, and I've made it maybe a number of times, is not pausing and letting God in before I responded, maybe being too pushy. I know on the hospital wards, there were a few occasions when the guy who was doing it with me said, you nearly pulled that woman out of her bed to go down to the meeting. You know what I mean? And maybe the same with sponsees, actually. I think I've got better, but I have had times where I've been harsh and quite insistent, and it just doesn't work. You know, I've been sharing it a lot, but playing God just doesn't work. And, I feel I'm learning that. And as a result, you know, results aren't up to me, but, you know, there's a lot I can do to make for a good experience for myself and others. Well, my motive has to be to have a good experience for others, and if I don't provide a good experience for others in whatever setting I'm serving, I'm not going to have a good experience later myself. So, you know, it's what I have to let God in to do that.
So the next question. I like service, but other alcoholics drive me crazy. How do I continue doing service without going crazy myself?
That's the point, right? It's about going against what you really want. That's what I've learned personally, is that when I have resistance, that's the thing I need to push through. When I do that, what I can find is patience, kindness, tolerance, and love. I also ask for that every morning, as is in the instructions in the book. And when I do that, I can meet people where they are. And the, I think there's a sort of beauty in finding the people in the rooms that make you crazy and making them, you know, sitting next to them and having a conversation and humanizing that part of it. It makes you grow. So that I would say do the service, even if they make you crazy. It's super rewarding. That's been my experience.
To just be very brief, 100,000 Al-Anon meetings helps. But you can just start with 6 and then find if it works. Start with 6, find a group that you like and learn some of those principles.
And I need to be willing to be inconvenienced. You know, when I got sober first, I was a lot younger. I was in my mid-30s and, you know, I used to jump up for 12-step calls, and I used to drive people around, and my driving was terrible. And they used to say, if alcoholism doesn't kill me, your driving will. But I did it with great enthusiasm, you know, and I went everywhere I could to do it. I'm a bit older now, and I sometimes don't want to do my service. You know, after a week's work, I don't always want to. I usually walk up to my local Whips Cross Hospital on a Friday. I do the Tina at Brick Lane. There's some Saturdays I don't feel like doing it. But, you know, it is my primary purpose. And I honour those commitments because I may drink again. If I drift away from AA, I've been around long enough. You don't need to be around that long to see it. I see people drifting away. And it starts with them drifting away from their service and their home groups. And they drink again or they start going insane. I know I could go insane without a drink. So I know once I get there, I'll be really happy. Yesterday I felt tired, I didn't want to go and do my service, but I felt absolutely tip-top after I had done it, you know. So I just have to not listen to my mind. My mind tells me lies, I have to get past that, and I have smart feet, so it keeps me doing it.
What is the best way to be of service to other fellows in their first few months of recovery, do you think?
So I would say the best service, especially for newcomers, is in America they have this idea of like graduating class, right? So everybody that's recovered in the same year, you kind of stick together and call each other. That's the best service, right? Just pick up the phone and say, how are you feeling today, right? Like just completely detach from anything that I need to get out of it. I'm wasting your time. Get rid of all of that. Just call people and you would be surprised at the impact that you can have on another fellow. And then the other one is definitely tea service. I know that it gets a bad rap, but it will force you to meet everybody in that meeting. They will get to know your name, and there's nothing like walking into a meeting and someone saying, hey, Jimmy, how are you? So I would say those are the best, in my opinion.
Yeah, excellent point. I think sometimes I can use lines in a big book, in the big book, to defend myself and protect myself. It says there's a line that says we don't chase, right? Well, there's a difference between chasing and calling. there's a clear difference. Exchanging telephone numbers is a great start. So one message, one phone call. If they don't want to answer, they don't answer. I also tend to say to newcomers, feel free to use me as a resource. You know, just if you've got any questions, after a while, there is such a thing as a silly question, but initially, there's no such thing as a silly question after the first few months. Or the silliest one is the one that's not asked initially, for sure. I think some people go, I did this. So I would give a newcomer my number and say, yeah, call me. They're not going to call. So an exchange of numbers is helpful. And then just a call or just a polite message, how are you doing? Let them know you're available. It's certainly very helpful. But also encouraging them to find, to connect with other people in recovery who they, you know, this idea of sticking with the winners, it's, you know, find people in your peers, find people ahead of you, find people further, slightly behind in the, on the pathway. Yeah, generally reaching out and connecting to people. And from my side, when, you know, there's also that line, you know, ask each day what you can do for the alcoholic who still suffers. And I ask that question, and sometimes it's like, when did you call that newcomer whose number you took the other day? Simple things like that. And if invariably, if I don't want to do it, that's normally God's will for me. So, yeah, it's simple things like that.
I think most of it has been said, but I just think encouraging them to get involved, also encouraging them to talk to people newer than themselves. You know, in the meetings, just getting them to talk to somebody who's just come in. Right, yeah.
So this question is drifting a bit into Al-Anon as well. So it would come under the umbrella of the service of sponsorship. So the question is, when working with sponsees, I need to, as I understand it, call out error if someone is going down the wrong path. How do I square this with Anonism and not come off like a busybody with unsolicited advice? So the question being, what is the service that the sponsor is responsible for, and where does that end, I think, is, if anyone wants to. Yeah, let's not surprise Jimmy each time with the question.
So in essence, the question is, when does sponsorship veer into
an Al-Anon slip.
Right.
With unsolicited advice, although to be one sponsor, one hopes that the advice is assumed or solicited by dint of having the conversation. I'm not sure. You deal with the
Yeah, first of all, I think the relationship, the sponsee-sponsor relationship, I mean, Clancy talks very well about it. He talks about it being, well, it's not really a dictatorship, because it can end at the sponsee's say-so. When he or she says it's over. So it's not a dictatorship in that sense. This idea of never giving advice... what are you going to do? Like literally say nothing? Well, clearly there are points, especially when someone's completely new to 12-step fellowships. Frankly, I needed not just suggestions; I needed telling. I need clear-cut instructions. I need the guidelines. Like, don't do that. Literally, do something else. But what I was also thinking of, if the relationship is not sponsorship, and then I can clearly, what I'm asked to provide is an adequate presentation of the program, not more, not less. When I'm interfering. And when I'm poking my nose in, then that's being busybody. I'm just to provide an adequate presentation of the program. When I've got in trouble in sponsorship, when I'm sponsoring someone, I'm poking my nose into something I haven't been asked about that's outside of the program, and I'm just interfering. And I need to correct that quickly. I always come back to the step. What principle is it that needs to be applied for the person I'm talking to at that time? What principle ought to be applied? Avoid being a busybody generally, or interfering, intrusional. It's not necessary if I'm not. Specifically asked, I can clarify the question. If I'm not specifically asked to about a particular issue, and also if I don't have any experience on it, it's okay to say I don't have the experience on it. But I do know somebody who does have some experience with that. Would you like to talk to them? That's also helpful.
Yeah. I think we're going to wind up now in the next 60 seconds. Helene, did you have something you wanted to?
Yeah, just on that, I'm learning not to give advice, particularly to people in the programme. I have given advice to family members and it hasn't gone very well. They're not in the programme though, but for people in the programme, my current sponsor is very hot on, she doesn't give me advice, she just gets me to read bits of the book. And I do that now, even if people haven't got to the bits of the book. There was somebody I'm sponsoring going to a hen party in very early recovery. Didn't feel like a good idea. But I just said, read pages 101, 102, and bookend it with meetings, maybe. That's what I did. And make sure you call people. And it seems to have worked out okay. But, yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry that we didn't get to all of the questions. We ran out of time. So that's all the time we have, I'm afraid. Thank you for being part of this. And I wish you a good rest of your weekend. If we can close with the serenity prayer. God.